Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Today we welcome the folks from Microsoft Learning as they kick off their new series, Cert Talk, with host Jay Seymour. Tune in as Jay welcomes Liberty Munson, Senior Program Manager and Resident Psychometrician for the team, as they discuss how exams are created, scored, maintained, and protected, as well as how new Microsoft certification exams will look like over the next few months. Also, be sure to watch for Senior IT Pro Evangelist, Chris Avis, as he gives us some tips on private cloud certification exams you can take. Jay, the mic is yours.
Welcome to Cert Talk. I'm your host, Jay Seymour. I'm a product planner for certification here at Microsoft Learning. And with me, my first guest is Liberty Munson. She is a psychometrician at Microsoft Learning, and she has a PhD in industrial and organizational psychology. But she's a civilian, so you do not salute her. She's also a resident movie buff. Thanks for being our first guest, Liberty.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So what is a psychometrician, and what do you do here at Microsoft Learning?
Psychometricians are interested in learning the psychology of measurement. Essentially, how do we measure to ensure someone has the knowledge, skills, and abilities to perform a job or tasks or in a content domain? My job here at Microsoft is to ensure that our certification exams are valid and reliable measures of that content domain.
So can you walk me through a day in the life of Liberty?
So my days usually involve looking at the psychometric performance of our exams and the items from a statistical perspective, helping us identify which content is working, what's not, and then making sure that those exams remain valid and reliable measures. I also spend a lot of time thinking about how we can innovate around design, development, delivery, and defense against people who want to steal our content or cheat, also known as pirates.
We don't like pirates. So walk us through how an exam gets created.
So Microsoft uses a very rigorous process to develop exams. It's based on an industry-recognized process that has been built on best practices to ensure that at the end of the day, our exams are valid and reliable measures. So exam development starts with identifying the tasks that need to be measured on a certification exam. From there, we will prioritize those tasks because usually the tasks that are involved to perform a job are much more than what we can measure on a certification exam. So we have a prioritization process. Both identifying the tasks and prioritizing the tasks are done by subject matter experts. Microsoft employees are not involved in this process at all. We trust and rely on external subject matter expertise to help us define the content domain. Once we know what the content domain will be for an exam, we will make sure that we have some item ideas to around each of those content areas, and then we will blueprint. Again, subject matter experts external to Microsoft are involved in the blueprinting process. During blueprinting, those subject matter experts tell us how important each task is and how frequently it's performed. And then using that information, I can determine how many items we will write to each of those task areas or content areas. From there, we have subject matter experts again write the items for us. These are not Microsoft employees who are writing the items, but they are external subject matter experts who really know the technology and how it's used in the real world. Then we have a different set of subject matter experts actually technically review each of the items. And by doing that, we make sure that the items are as good as they can possibly be through what we call the alpha review. The alpha review is a very, very time-consuming and difficult process because every item in the item pool is reviewed by the subject matter experts, and we ensure that it's as technically accurate and as good as it can possibly be during that review process. From there, then, even the best item, even the items we think are perfect when we get to this through the alpha, sometimes they don't work well in an exam situation. And so to make sure that the items will actually perform the way we expect them to, we put them through what we call a beta process, where we actually deliver the exams in an exam-like situation. Candidates come in, take the exams, and then using the information or the footprint that they leave when they take the exam, I'm able to determine if an item is performing as we would expect it to. Is an item too easy? Is it too hard? Is it differentiating between qualified and unqualified candidates? And I can tell that simply by looking at the statistics that people leave when they take an exam. From there, then, I identify items that we're going to keep, and then we have items that we're going to kill. There's always some items that are somewhere in the middle where I'm not sure if it's a good item or a bad item, and then I need subject matter experts to help me decide if we keep or kill an item. So again, using input from subject matter experts, I will finalize the item pool, and then we will set the cut score. It is a very common misperception among Microsoft certifications and certifications in general that the certification program will set the cut score kind of arbitrarily. In fact, we have subject matter experts provide guidance in how we set the cut score. They take the look at the item pool, the qualifications of the minimally qualified candidate, and using those two pieces of information, I have a conversation with subject matter experts, and they help guide where the cut score should be set. So although we have a 700 is the cut score on all of our exams, meaning you need to earn 700 to pass, that does not mean you have to answer 70% of the content correctly. In fact, it could be more, it could be 80%, it could be 60%, but it truly depends on the difficulty of the item pool and the qualifications of the minimally qualified candidate. So you may ask, why do we scale scores? Well, the reason is because it makes things easier for Liberty in a lot of ways, but there's also a reason from a candidate perspective. So if I manage about 125 Microsoft certification exams, if someone asks me what the cut score is on any of those exams, it's hard for me to know. So it's easy for Liberty to say 700. 700, doesn't matter what exam you take. But what matters more for you from a candidate perspective, the reason we do this is because the difficulty of the items that you see if you have to retake an exam may be different on each administration. So what we want to be able to do is to be able to tell you if your actually performance has improved or not from one retake to the next. And so that's why we scale the scores. But it doesn't mean that you have to have 70% in order to pass. From there, once I know that what the item pool is, what the cut score is, we can actually publish the exams, then we'll localize them. And then actually, this is where my job really kicks in, is making sure that the exams, once they've been published, continue to be valid and reliable measures of the content domain. And I do that by looking at each exam at least once every year psychometrically. Our highest run rate exams, I will look at up to 4 times a year.
So people often ask me, gosh, I missed that. I got a 750, so I must have missed it by one question. That's not necessarily true then.
It's not necessarily true because of the way we scale the scores. So it's kind of a magic of math, and it's the way that the scaled scores work. But it really depends on how many items are above the cut score and how many are below it. And then it's just a distribution across the scale.
So I can't be a subject matter expert, but how do the folks sign up?
So we actually have a program called our SME database program. In that SME database is where we go to recruit people to help us with exam development and learning development opportunities. So that's the best way to get yourself involved, is to sign up for our SME database. And from there, if you have the skills and abilities that will help us create exams or even learning content, we will reach out to you.
And they can find that on Born to Learn.
Absolutely.
So a lot of people are familiar with multiple choice questions, and they really worry that that's not a good measurement of their skill. Is it? And what are we doing about that?
So it turns out that multiple choice questions actually are very good measures of candidate skills. They are used for a reason, and they're used because they do work well. They differentiate between qualified and unqualified candidates, but they're a little bit boring. So one of the things that we have been trying to do is to add back in some of the item types that you may be familiar with that have a little more interaction and are a little more fun. So as an example, this is a build list that we have. We also have drag and drops. We have active screens. And then we also have case study exam items. We have simulations on some of our exams, and we're introducing some new item types as well. Extended matching questions, which have a longer list of options to choose from. They look like an answer, a multiple choice question, just many more answers to select from. And then that same answer set is used for multiple questions. We are introducing a code case review study, where it's basically the same as our case studies that you see on pro-level exams, but it's based around a bunch of code that is for our developers to increase the real-world relevance for them. And then we've also recently introduced a best answer choice. These will only appear on pro-level exams, but the idea is we're expecting people at that level to really know what it is about a situation and identify when it is the best answer. So on a best answer question, all of the options could solve the problem, but one of them is the best solution given the problem statement. So we really are trying to build some fun and interaction back into these item types by doing some of the more drag and drop, build list, innovative kinds of items.
And you mentioned best answer. Is that Microsoft? Is that us sitting in a room just making up what the best answer is?
We have a very rigorous process for defining the best answer, and it's not Microsoft's way. We actually have a large number of subject matter experts review each best answer question and come to an agreement on what the best answer actually is. And it is rarely the Microsoft way. It's the way it's done in the real world. That is the best answer to solve that particular problem.
Some of these items look kind of wordy. We used to get complaints that our questions were a lot of reading comprehension, but it seems like we're adding some of this context back in. Can you explain why we're doing that?
Yeah. What we have found over the course of the last 5 or 6 years is that we have really removed a lot of the contextual information out of the question. If you look at some of our questions today, they are essentially three sentences. You are doing X in this organization. Here's the problem. What would you do? In your real world, in the real life, in your real job, how often does that actually happen? Where someone comes in and says, this is what the problem is, I need you to solve it. That rarely happens. So in an effort to increase the real world relevance of the questions, we are adding more of the contextual information back in. We are expecting candidates to be able to go through and weed through a lot of information like they would do on their job to help them figure out what is the problem, identify what the problem is, and then come up with the right solution, and then select that, of course, in the answer.
So why are we adding this stuff back? Why are we changing the questions?
One of the things that I've learned through some of the research that I did with the candidate experience related to our certification exam is that the wide variety of item types actually adds value to them. They believe that they are better measures of the content domain. They have more fun. And in fact, we have seen through some of this data analysis that I have done that they increases the real world relevance of the certification exam. So as a result, we have decided to add a wider variety of item types to not only increase candidate interest in taking the exams, but also to increase the value of the certification.
You know, I've taken a lot of tests over the years, and that doesn't look like the test that I've taken.
We are making some big changes to the user interface when it comes to our certification exams. We're going to move into this century and do something really cool and really fun with the content and the way we deliver it. So in the next few months, you will start seeing that more and more exams will be delivered using this user interface and will look like this versus our old stuff. So big changes are coming. We're very, very excited about it. This stuff looks cool. It's going to be fun, more innovative item types, and a great user interface.
That's good to hear. Now, let's get into what really keeps me up at night, cheaters and piracy. What are we doing to make sure cheaters don't prosper?
We have taken a lot of different actions against piracy. Microsoft has 4 pillars that we actually focus on when it comes to anti-piracy and our campaign against pirates. Our first is to actually educate candidates on what we consider piracy. A lot of different cultures have different experiences when it comes to collaboration. So one of our big steps is just letting people know what Microsoft considers to be cheating. So we spend a lot of time around the notion of education. It's surprising what people think that is okay, and we kind of have to correct them on that. So education is a big pillar for us. The next part of it is to actually protect the content. We do this by having candidates sign a non-disclosure agreement, which basically says that they will not disclose any of the content that they see. We have a lot of different programs and practices and policies in place to protect the content. The way we deliver it is through lots of encryption and lots of security around the content itself. We, at the test centers, they'll have video cameras and things like that to make sure people can't walk in and take the content, take pictures of the content. Even though we can do everything we possibly can around protection, sometimes the stuff gets out. So we need people to tell us when there's problems, that they think that the items have been stolen or whatever, a candidate is cheating in some way. And using those tips that we get from the public and through other means, we will investigate the issues that have been raised. So we really rely on the community to give us feedback on what is going on so we can make sure we're investigating the right things. Through that investigation, we will take action. We bring down brain dump sites. We do it every week, every month. We do it as we find them. We will ban candidates if they're behaving in bad behavior, and we will close test centers. We do all of those things. We just haven't had the luxury to be able to talk about it very publicly because of some of the legal issues and privacy issues that go around with such investigations. However, on November 10th, we have a big announcement related to what we've been doing around piracy. So keep your eyes out on Microsoft News Center, because that's where we're going to announce it. It's big news, and I'm very excited, and it's going to change the tone of the way we talk about anti-piracy.
I can't wait. So tell me, can you give me an example of a specific thing that we're doing?
I wish I could. The problem with us telling too much about what we're doing around anti-piracy is it gives the cheaters a way to work around it. So the less we tell you, the better it is. Really, these are secrets you want me to keep. We don't want people to be able to figure out what we're doing to catch and identify pirates and cheaters and test centers that are engaging in bad behavior.
But you can tell if somebody's cheating just by the stats that they leave after they take a test.
Yes. Not only do we look at the statistics that are left and the footprint that's left behind when people take exams, but we look for patterns of bad behavior. We look at it at the candidate level. We look at it at the test center level. And we do actually look at it at the exam level. And in combination, we can tell when someone's been doing something they shouldn't have been doing.
Well, that's very interesting. I love always seeing your data, but I'm glad that I don't have to do the math. So it's been fascinating, Liberty. Thank you for being our first guest. We really appreciate it. And finally, we're going to close out with a few words from Chris Avis. You've been watching Cert Talk. I'm Jay Seymour, your host. Good night.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Avis, and I'm an IT evangelist with the Microsoft Corporation. And I'm screencasting to you here from my basement in Redmond, Washington. So if you've seen any of my other screencasts, you might be familiar with this. In any case, I'm here to talk to you a little bit about cloud computing, and more specifically about the private cloud aspect of cloud computing. If you've been watching the technology sector at all these days, cloud computing is just a big, big deal. And private cloud is just one piece of this that really lends a lot of agility to a business. And to go along with that, I wanted to speak specifically around some certifications that will go towards giving you some good skill sets to be able to implement some private clouds for your environment. So specifically, there's two certifications that we have right now. One is the 70-659 exam. That's the Windows 2008 R2 Server Virtualization exam. The other exam is the 70-400 exam, which is the Microsoft System Center Operations Manager 2007 configuring exam. So you might be asking yourself, why would I be interested in those two exams as they pertain to private cloud? Well, from the virtualization exam perspective, virtualization is really key in implementing a private cloud. We leverage virtualization to be able to put workloads, whether they're applications or servers or client machines, into a private cloud environment, typically with some sort of a portal that allows you to provision those resources very, very quickly. Having a good understanding of virtualization, how it's implemented, how you can do high availability, failover clustering, things of that example or that variety, that will be a really good groundwork for being able to implement a private cloud. In the case of Operations Manager gives us some reporting and monitoring information around how those workloads are operating within our environment. So how the server is performing, how the applications are performing, how the clients are performing. Kind of the big four around memory, CPU, networking, and disk access, along with a lot of other information. So being able to configure and implement Operations Manager in those environments will also go a long way towards being able to help you implement a private cloud effectively and efficiently. So what I'd like to do is actually put up, if I can, a slide on screen to show you some information. So there's the two exams that are listed there. Then the next link, which is the aka.ms/certify link, that links out to a blog post that I did about a month ago called Your Private cloud, sorry, I almost forgot, your private cloud toolbox all in one blog post. It's just a blog post that has a whole bunch of resources around implementing a private cloud. And those two exams are actually listed at the very bottom of that blog post with links out to some additional information. And then also included in that blog post is lots of information around implementing, getting started with implementing a private cloud. The other link at the bottom, chrisavis.com, that's just the link to my general blog. I would love to have a conversation with you through my blog around anything at all Microsoft related. I am focused a lot on private cloud those these days, so you'll see a lot of information posted to my blog around private cloud. At this point, I'd just like to thank the Microsoft Learning folks for letting me record this to go along with their TechNet Radio sessions. And with that, we'll talk to you on another session. Thank you.